Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents of children with disabilities. In this week's episode, we're talking about stillborn babies, juvenile arthritis and stuttering.
This podcast contains truth, laughter and the occasional F word, so it's not suitable for children. This is your language warning, please. Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Here we are in the pod bar on the same couch.
Woo!
Woo-hoo-hoo! We're allowed in people's houses.
Yay, Melbourne.
Yay, Melbourne. What a day. What a day.
We have just recorded the snap piece, so you will hear us talk all about that on Monday.
Yes, you'll hear us go on about it. Yep.
So we don't want to go on about it again, but maybe we do.
Well, just for Auntie Lacey, the weather's beautiful.
It's beautiful today.
It's a beautiful sunny day.
It's like Melbourne's shining down its happiness.
Yes, it is. It is.
Yes, it's just a beautiful spring day.
Yeah, coffee shops are open.
Oh,
amazing.
Yeah.
I was saying to Scholarship this morning, it's pretty funny. I think we're going to have a beautiful cup day and no one could go. It often's raining or,
yes,
you know,
and you see everyone in their beautiful dresses and their high heels and the hats being blown away.
Anyway, this year it's cup day from home.
Take that, gambling.
Yeah, take that. I hate the gambling.
I hate it too. Anyway, I'm happy for a day off.
Yes.
But anyway, let's not go there. Okay.
Yep. Right. Anyway, super, super, super special episode today. I know that you know, Peas, because you listen to all of our episodes. But when we went to Sydney, I got given a beautiful bottle of wine with called Patrick. That was the name of my beautiful father, and it's a name of a beautiful baby as well. And his mum, I won't tell you what her Zoom name is. Because
she can tell us.
She can tell us. What's your Zoom name?
That would be Penetrator.
Penny Traitor.
Penny being my surname, Penny Traitor.
I was like, oh, that's a nice name.
Oh, it's funny.
Welcome to the podcast, Donna.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so thrilled to have you.
We're so thrilled. We've got, you know that I loved that bottle of wine so much.
Oh, yes.
Just have you drunk it yet?
I haven't drunk it yet. Because I'll tell you why. We've been in lockdown and so I wanted to drink it with someone who knew Dad.
Yes.
So like my brother or whatever. So,
because remember we did the Sydney show and then we went straight into the lockdown.
Yes. And then we were only
out
the
next
for a couple
week.
Of
and
weeks,
then we were, yeah.
And we're back in. So now we can share bottles of wine with friends. Yeah. So it's actually on my dressing
Happy
table.
Happy days.
Yes.
I've kept
yes.
it in my room.
So. And we read out, did we read out your letter last year to us?
Oh, did you?
Yes.
I think we did, yes.
I think we did, yeah. But anyway, we'll get into it.
I had a baby in March, so I've been playing catch up, so I'm roughly 3 months behind.
Oh, yes, so, of course. Yes.
Well, you've got to listen to
all
women.
The lockdown stuff. Just
don't listen to the snap piece.
Don't listen to the snap piece. Just skim through them. It's just hours of us lamenting.
So, yes.
Okay, ask the questions, Kate.
All right. So the first question we have is, do you have any music or songs or bands that get you through either bad times or good times?
Look, I do. And one that's really special is an Australian singer, Peter Allen. My mum must have had really diverse tastes because I got brought up on musicals. She must have been a gay man at heart. But she played me a lot of Peter Allen, and I always loved Tenfield Sadler.
Yes.
And for some reason I sung it to all my kids when I was pregnant with them.
Oh.
And, yes, and we played it at Patrick's funeral, and, you know, I've sung it to all my kids and they sort of respond to it. My youngest is 7 months and she's a bit of a Sookie Lala, so it sort of works. So that's a really special song. My middle son doesn't actually know what it's called. He just says special song. And once when it was once when he heard it on the radio with Peter Allen singing, he said, "Why is the man singing your special song?"
Oh, that's beautiful.
So beautiful.
That is a beautiful song.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
Did you win any awards at school?
Look, I was a bit of a nerd, so I did win some academic awards.
Yeah,
awards,
tell us.
But I peaked fairly early, and by the time I finished school, no awards for me.
That's all right. Mandy and I are still awardless.
We are awardless after last night was the Australian of the Year.
Which we did not progress through.
Because we emailed Donna, we're like, well, if we win, we might have to do media. So I emailed her this morning, we lost.
I was sure we would be doing this, so it's all good.
I know,
it's all good. And our last question is, why are you a P?
So my son Patrick, who was my first baby, he died during labour and my placenta wasn't working from about 38 weeks, but he was born at 41, so he held on a really long time. But look, had he been born alive, he almost certainly would have had cerebral palsy. And I'm also a P because I've got three kids now, and my second boy was diagnosed with juvenile arthritis at about 18 months and stutters just to keep it interesting during lockdown. So that's why I'm a P.
Yes.
So we're going to start at the beginning of Patrick's story. So we will talk about your other beautiful children, but really we wanted to talk to you about Patrick.
Yeah.
And he's just got the most beautiful name. And so how was your pregnancy with Patrick?
Look, I really hate this term, but I had a textbook pregnancy. Yeah. I'm pretty much an old duck now, but then I was probably young enough and I just had a really uncomplicated pregnancy and you know, we fell pregnant reasonably quickly and everything was going well. And I was so low risk that I think at the start of my third trimester, I was picked up by the local birth centre.
Right.
So I was looking, you know, I was sort of anticipating having a pretty normal pregnancy. And then in the third trimester, I had a couple of instances of reduced movements. So they took me to I went to hospital to have that all checked out, and it was fine at the time until, I got to right to the end with Patrick, which is probably a bit unusual. Like, labour had started by the time he died.
Right.
Until it all went wrong, it was going swimmingly. Mm. And on paper, I was low risk. I probably, you know, we know things clinically now. Mm. I wasn't as low risk on paper as I actually looked. But, I had a great pregnancy.
Mm. So, right.
And pretty lucky in that respect.
When you say there were moments of low movement, now looking back, do they say that is not textbook, or are they like that can happen to anybody and just?
Probably on reflection, that was a sign. Mm. But you know, I wasn't naive. I actually knew the miscarriage and stillbirth statistics. A family friend had had a stillbirth about 5 years
right.
prior.
Yeah.
So I knew these things, and yeah. I knew sleeping on the side is sort of a risk mitigation factor for stillbirth, but it wasn't commonly communicated, and that's only 5 years ago. But I knew that stuff, so right. I didn't sort of I knew it was important yeah. when Patrick stopped moving to get it checked out. So it was more the growth side of things. Patrick was showing signs that he wasn't growing,
right.
and that wasn't investigated and escalated appropriately. So, you know, that it, I sort of had a feeling during my pregnancy, not that something would go wrong, but I wasn't unaware of the risks or
right.
the stats. So yeah, but probably. Yeah, they were signs, and they probably should have been investigated in a different way.
Mm. Mm. Well, if you can prevent that from happening to somebody else, then that's why the message is powerful. You know,
absolutely,
not to torment yourself.
And yeah, and look, I suppose the other thing is, like, you know, it's good to know. Well, no, it's not good. You got to have a bit of black humor about these things, but. Even in death, like, you're tormented with guilt. You
yes.
know, the only thing that I didn't have me low risk was I've always been a bit chunky, and but I didn't actually realise how far into the overweight spectrum I was.
Right.
And so I don't even know how it came up. I think they talked about at an appointment, like, late in the third trimester, you know, you might have to have some injections afterward. And I said, oh, what for? And basically because I was fat.
Oh.
And I was sort of, oh, gee, you know, no, my midwife, my beautiful midwife, I might add, didn't say that. they're my words. But I remember saying to her, oh, you know, right, should I try and not put on weight, or, you know, how much weight should I put on, or, you know, how bad is this? And she sort of, it was as if, you know, once I asked a question, she crunched some numbers. She said, okay, aim to not put on any more than this, which I did.
Yeah.
So that was sort of the only way I wasn't textbook risk. But of course, after the fact, like, being overweight is a risk factor for placental issues.
Oh.
So, you know, you beat yourself up about
yes.
that. But, you know, look, that's actually, you know, I know plenty of parents
plenty.
Who don't know why their kid died, and,
yeah.
you know, or just normal parents, you know, everyone suffers from guilt. So these
yes.
days, you know, you yep. just have to get on with it.
Yeah.
Well, you
yeah.
don't have a choice.
No, pretty much.
Can yeah. you tell us then when you were told that Patrick had died?
Yeah. So because I was 41 weeks when he was born, so I went into labour naturally on a Tuesday night, like late on a Tuesday night, and you know, my labour sort of got going. I thought we were on track to maybe have a baby on Wednesday, and you know, I was getting contractions were 5 minutes apart, and you know, because we're in the birth centre model, we'd stayed at home, and a midwife came to see us that day at home. So we got down to, you know, contractions being 5 minutes apart, feeling pretty good. You know, the only issue is, oh, gee, this is going to take a while. So everything was progressing nicely. And then by Wednesday afternoon, it had all slowed down. And I really started at that point to get this sense of foreboding. And I remember just being very agitated. My midwife came by, you know, 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And I said, no, I think we've got to go in. And she said, well, you know, you're not properly in labour, and which was a totally appropriate thing to say, I might add. But from that point on, I just had this sense of foreboding.
Mm.
So we stayed home, and by about 10 o'clock that night, I was pretty sure those movements had dropped off, because that's actually something funny. People don't tell you that your baby's moving all the time, even when you're in labour.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I don't think they do, because
it's all about you then, isn't it? It's
yeah.
all about how many contractions
yes.
are you having, and you're probably not, yes, that's true.
And you're not well placed to know
no.
that, but like I always tell people that now, spreading the word, you know, no, it's not normal. People say all the time, oh, your baby slows down in preparation for birth. That is not
no.
the case. And so, look, probably by about 10 o'clock that night, we called my midwife and said we're a bit concerned, and she said, well, you know, if you're concerned, come in and we'll get you checked out. And look, probably on reflection we should have, but I know Pat died around that time.
Right.
And by then, and you know, I'm jumping ahead, but we know now that was far too late anyway.
Yeah.
But then, so we had a really restless night, and I just stayed on the couch, and you know, contractions were like every 7 minutes. I wasn't really sleeping, just sort of in that haze of contractions and watching TV. But I remember about 5 o'clock on a Thursday morning now, I woke up my husband and I said, look, you've got to call Ange, our midnight wife. We're going in. And he sort of expressed a bit of reluctance and said, oh, no, it's too early. And I remember, like, I knew at this point Pat was gone. I said, look, I've got a dead baby inside me. So, and I know that, and I must say, I know that sounds really confronting, but I did know. And I said, so I'm having a shower, you call her, or I'm going without you when I come back. And and look, he looked pretty lively after that. And by the time I came out of the shower, he was packed and ready to go. And I just, I remember it was like the longest ride to the hospital ever. You know, it was only 20 minutes, but I knew and I thought I was doing a good job of keeping it from Bruce. But I wasn't. He says later he knew too. But I just remember this drive took forever and you know, there were speed bumps in the hospital car park and there were agony because I'm still contracting all this time. So anyway, we went in and I remember just thinking, it was the longest walk in. As long as I haven't, no one's told me, I'm still pregnant and I can still have a bit of hope. But yeah, look, and it was probably about 7 o'clock by this time and the midwife got out the Doppler. And look, we would have looked terrible. She had no idea what, you know, she was a bit surprised to see us looking so dour. She was in the, oh, we're having a baby today mindset. And couldn't find a heartbeat. So I didn't realise what had happened at the time, but she pressed the emergency button over my head. And it's a birth centre, so it's really quiet. So there's, you know, three people in the room. Other midwives were trying, and then they went to get the a doctor with a sonographer, with a sonogram machine. And this is funny. I mean, I know it doesn't sound funny, but the first machine they brought in didn't work. So, you know,
you're like, really?
Really? I know. Yeah. It was just, and, you know, you look back now and I just distinctly remember once they got one that worked, they called the obstetrician in and I could, again, it's very quiet, so I could hear her running as she's coming down the hall, but then she slowed her steps so she could walk into the room and appear calm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. But then just sort of got it and I hadn't had a lot of ultrasounds, but I could tell there was no movement, and they just said, "I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat."
Oh my
God. And yeah, look, it was they're the worst words I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
And we just, my husband was there, and we were just screaming and you know, the shock, like the clinical symptoms and shock setting. It was freezing cold. I think I was sick everywhere.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's down to business because, well, what people don't realize is, you know, there's still the business of being born. You're still pregnant and the baby has to come out. So,
And that's a different delivery. Everyone in the room's aware, you know, it must just.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I haven't lived it, but I can imagine there's like a reverence in the space.
Yeah, there definitely was. And I mean, it was perversely, it was actually the birth that I'd wanted. I did have drugs because not having drugs was about keeping a baby safe.
Yeah.
So I got hooked up to Syntocin because I'm still in labour at all this point. I'm having contractions every 5 to 7 minutes.
Mm.
So at that point we needed to make some decisions. So I got, I had an epidural. And then once we'd sort of made some plans, I got hooked up to the Syntocin drip and things got going a bit more quickly, but he still wasn't born till 8:30 that night.
What a long day.
It was a long day. So then just a long day of making decisions and, you know, very quickly you've got to sort of, you know, people are coming to see you and you've got to make plans for what will happen after the baby's born. You know, I don't remember. I was still in shock, and not just actually shocked, but the clinical term.
Yes.
You know, people coming to talk to me, and luckily, our hospital in Canberra has the main hospital has a dedicated bereavement midwife. So I didn't realise who she was at the time, but her unhappy job is to come and see people like me.
Wow.
And sort of guide them through, do you consent to an autopsy, and what would that look
goodness.
Like, and what might that tell you? And so, you know, we had some of those discussions. And
while
then,
you were still in labour.
While you're in labour.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my so, goodness.
Oh, boy. I
hadn't thought about it.
And, yeah. Well, and I might say I'm not critical of any of things, because they had to. It's actually, we're lucky that we got offered an autopsy, and because a lot of people don't, and we got answers. So, but these decisions have to be made. They're time critical. I guess if you provide a sense of certainty of what's going to happen, because, you know, then I had midwives talk to me about, okay, well, you know, this baby might look different, you know, they might be discoloured, or they might have torn skin, you know, and just to prepare you emotionally for what that might look like. But it's, you know, it's good to have those discussions, and you're just operating on autopilot. And at some point you've got to turn to your mind to, well, I've got to call the funeral home and, you know, all these sort of things. But I, you know, again, I think I'm really lucky that our hospital had this resource, because this is something, you know, Canberra might have 50 to 60 stillbirths a year. That's one a week. This person's coming and seeing women like me every week.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
Tell us about his birth, if you can.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it was sort of the birth I was after. Apart from the epidural, I had a natural labour, and my epidural didn't work great, but it allowed me to sort of just have a bit of a rest before we got down to the business. So there was about 7 o'clock in the morning, we found out Pat was gone, and then, you know, long day of decision. But by about 12, I think, we got the Syntocin drip in, and then had a quieter afternoon and just sort of tried to conserve resources, tried to rest, but, you know, had some visitors in that time. But then by the time he was born, it was just my mum and my husband. And I felt really terrible, because I'd said to mum before we knew Pat was gone, oh, you know, when he's born, no, we just want it to be my husband when I'm in the room. And so mum had remembered that and sort of honoured that wish. So she'd been with me the whole time I was in labour, but then just sort of silently slipped out before Pat was born.
I
felt terrible about that, because she was just waiting in the hall on her own, you know. I've always felt terrible about that. It's a little thing, but that would have, yeah, she thought she was doing the right thing by honouring what we'd said before. But yeah, he just sort of, I had no hope that he'd be born alive, because I knew he was gone, but I think my mum and Belle did harbour some hope. So when he was born and the room's just silent, like there's nothing, there's nothing. And I think the spell of shock didn't really break until I saw him and they put him on my chest.
Yeah.
And again, that was the sort of birth that I wanted. I wanted to deliver him myself, and I wanted him straight on my chest. And so they were able to give me that, which I think was, I was lucky, because I had midwifery-led care, and I don't think there was an obstetrician in the room all day apart from you know, coming and talking to me in a clinical way about stillbirth. So I got the birth that I had hoped that I'd get to have. It was just not the outcome. But
And did you know that he was a baby boy when you were pregnant?
Yeah, I did. I did. We decided to find out. We'd only ever talked about having one kid, and now we've got three. So I'd always seen myself with one in, you know, having one kid and having a girl.
Okay.
So I had this little bit of a preference. So, of course, when he died and he was a boy, I felt guilty. That's silly. But I remember at the time he was born, because it's silent, and, I, you know, I, again, I had an oral birth in the sense that I called out, is he a boy? And my midwife was a bit distracted cleaning him and, yes, he is. He's what you thought he was. And, yeah, he was absolutely beautiful. I mean, I hope my other kids don't listen to this, but he's the most beautiful baby I've ever had.
Yes.
No, they will understand that.
Yes. Can you talk us through through afterwards? You got to cuddle him.
Yeah,
so what are the things I got to do?
So this was sort of part of the preparation. They talked to us about things that we could do with our baby, bathe him and, dress him. So we did some of that. So, he was born about 8:30 on a Thursday, 5 years tomorrow, funnily enough.
Yes.
So mum was there when I was labouring, but my dad and brother came back to the hospital. They'd been there in and off, on and off through the day. Mm. And they all met him and cuddled him.
Yeah.
And that was really beautiful. And we took some photos and then it was just Bruce and I, and I sung him Tenderfield Sadler.
Mm.
And Bruce reckons for the first time in my life I didn't sound like cats were screeching.
Oh.
I managed a good rendition for Pat.
Of course.
It was lovely. And Bruce told him the story about how we had met, and then we just like any other new parents, just reveling in this beautiful baby, not quite believing that we'd made him.
Yes.
And just cuddling him. And then I think it was just a bit too much for Bruce in terms of bathing him, because, again, I don't mean for this to sound harsh, but Pat looked dead, and it was very hard to see him deteriorate quickly.
Yes.
But I gave him a bath. My beautiful midwife helped me give him a bath, and then we dressed him and we took him into our room. By this stage we were in a labour suite that we'd been moved back to the birth centre to spend the night, and then I wanted him to stay with us, and we had a little crib there, but we since found out there's at the hospital at the time there would have been something called a cuddle cot, and I'm not sure if you know what they are.
But explain them to our listeners. Yes.
Yeah, so they're essentially little cribs, but they've got a cooling system and mat there, so you can have your baby with you. They're preserved, and it enables you to spend a bit more time.
Yes.
So there were cuddle cots at the hospital that we were at the time, but we weren't offered one, and on reflection, it's probably because it was in use by another family, which is very sad.
Okay.
So we didn't have one, and I remember the midwife sort of said to me, "Look, when you're finished, put him back in this crib that cover his face with a sheet." And I just couldn't bear that thought. It's just so.
Why do you think she said that? Why did she say that? Do you think?
It would have. He was deteriorating in the air, so it would have just protected him a bit more.
Right.
But I just couldn't stand the thought of him being
absolutely
covered by sheep.
No.
And she wasn't being sick.
No.
She just wanted to help us out.
Yes.
So he was taken away, and had I known he was taken away to be put in the fridge in the morgue, I probably wouldn't have agreed to that, because when he came back to us the next day, he was cold. I just wasn't prepared for that. I didn't think of that.
Well, you don't know.
Well, yeah.
No.
How do you know?
Yeah, all these things you don't know. But, so then the next day we got a few hours sleep and all the normal things are happening post-birth. I'm contracting.
Of course.
To make the uterus go back and the breasts are starting to firm up. And so the next day we had contacted an organisation called Heartfelt. Their founder, they started in Melbourne, where you guys are.
Yes, we know it.
They take photos. Mm. They come into hospitals. You guys probably know them.
We do.
They take photos of stillborn and terminally ill kids.
Yes.
So a Heartfelt photographer came in, and I always remember this, like, they're amazing. We fundraise for them since. They're just amazing.
Yeah.
I called Heartfelt at about 8:30 in the morning, and then they called me back within an hour. I said, yep, a photographer will be coming about 11:30. And so about 11, I got a call from the photographer, and she was so apologetic. She said, oh, look, I've just been caught up. I'll come in half an hour. I'm so sorry. Oh, that's all right. I found out later she got the call. She was in a place near Canberra that's about 3 hours away. So she'd gotten up, had a normal day, got a call, got in her car, drove 3 hours. She looked like she was in business attire. So I thought she was, you know, an office worker from Canberra, came and took photos with us, and then went back and edited them. And, I mean, just amazing people.
Beautiful, beautiful people. I think when something in your life happens that's tragic, and this was tragic, you meet the most beautiful people.
Yes, yes, you do. So, I mean, yeah, just enveloped by kindness,
yes.
Enveloped. Anyway, so I couldn't, by this point, I was fine post-birth, you know, just the usual post-birth stuff. So we elected to go home after that because we're in the birth centre.
Yes. And while it what's that like?
You know, well, you know, crying babies. Yes. And that's, the birth centre's quiet in comparison.
Yes.
And I always remember, you know, the birth centre setup is such that you've got your room, but then a communal little kitchen tea making station. I remember getting a cup of tea in the early hours of the morning, and there was only other one family in there, but they wandered out with their baby, and I just couldn't.
No.
You know, I couldn't stay in the hospital, and that was the same
for both of us.
So we went home.
Yeah, you have to be home. Yeah.
And was that when you, is that when you said goodbye to Patrick, or had you already said goodbye to him?
We had him in the morning for the photos, and then we took a bit of time by ourselves and with mum. And then Bruce's parents had come at some point in the morning, and then we said goodbye and left in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And my poor dad, I'd just said to him, you just make that car seat disappear. So
your dad
had to pull the car seat out of the car, and
That makes me want to cry.
Yeah.
I mean,
I understand not leaving with a baby, but I got to go back.
Yes.
So I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
That's really something.
I just remember driving away from that hospital and just wanting to scream. And, you know, how do people, you guys have talked about that feeling leaving your hospital with your babies, just how, what is wrong with this world that keeps on turning when my babies are in there?
Yes. Well, it's wrong.
Yes.
How did you endure it?
You just do. You know, there's no, like, you just seems really perverse that your heart keeps beating.
Yes.
Haven't.
Yes. And then you notice it.
And I just didn't. Yes. Yes. And I just thought it was, you know, for a time there, it was, you know, I didn't want to be here.
Yes, I bet.
Because it was too much. And too we painful. Drove straight painful. From the hospital, and I was just still in activity mode. I knew we had to talk to the funeral home, so we drove straight from the hospital to there and made those arrangements, and then went home. And and that was it. You just we wish we hadn't left so early, because I wish I had more time with Pat, because I now, with the benefit of hindsight, I would have taken him outside. I would have taken him home probably.
Yeah.
I would have, you know, take him into the moonlight and the sunlight and just, yeah, I would have done things differently, but you just do what you do at the time.
Yes.
And you, there's nobody else. You can't ring someone and say, what did you do? You know, which is what women do.
Right.
We say, what did it feel like when you're in labour? What did it feel like if you had an episiotomy? What did it feel like when you tore? All those questions.
Yeah.
Well, who do you turn to when your story is so different?
Yes.
So, you know, that's why it's so important to tell them. Because it happens to so many beautiful babies and women.
How did you handle...
Six a day, by the way.
Six a day. In Australia.
In Australia.
That's a lot of babies.
How did you handle communicating with people?
I think I made 5 calls, and they're all dreadful. The first was to my mum, and then she just took... She told, you know, my aunt, who I'm very close to, and she told the extended family, and then I think Bruce would have told his parents, and then I called 4 girlfriends who, you know, could sort of spread the news amongst our friendship group, and all the conversations weren't the same. So they're all, like, my immediate family knew what was happening, but I got this bright, bubbly hello from my friends because they're expecting me to call. Yeah, and I said, and I remember it, I laugh at it now, but it went the same with everyone. I sort of said, oh, are you at work? And, yep. Yeah, oh, can you step away, go into a kitchen, go into an office or something?
Oh, that was kind of you.
And they all just said, oh, God. And and then I told them. And then I think I might have said it on Facebook because a lot of people, you know, when you're due, people ask, oh, when's the baby? And I just knew it was the most quick and easy way to stop that. Yes, so I didn't have to do too much of that, but I remember those calls because they were all bloody brutal.
I bet they were. Did a lot of your friends have babies at the time, or were you the first? Or
I think probably I knew people who I was people were either a couple of years ahead of me, so they had young kids, or I was the first of my best mates to have babies. So that was sort of a blessing in that respect.
Yeah, you didn't have to go to their houses and see little babies all the time.
Yes, that's right. So I still can't see little baby. I mean, I don't hold. I made an exception for my best girlfriend.
Yeah,
but I don't. I don't hold babies.
No, I was the same.
And that's it.
And
yeah, you don't have to.
A very long time. No, you don't.
No,
have
you don't.
No,
that's
right.
And when your last memory was your beautiful baby, that's what that's the last baby you want to hold. It's the only baby you want to hold, I would think.
Did you Did you have the nursery set up? Did you have to dismantle that? Did you leave it for a while? How did you handle that?
Yeah. We had offers from people to do that for us, but it almost seemed laughable. And to be fair, you know, the person who offered, I didn't have a great relationship with, but like we just shut the door.
Yes.
And I think I probably put it away.
What, they came to your door and said?
No, no, she shut the door of the nursery.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like someone's at the door, I'm coming to do it for you. No. Nope. I shut the door on some friends, like physically did.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the diagnosis time. Yep. So I was picturing that. Sorry.
Look, it's funny you should say that because the people who offered, I probably would have, but.
Yeah.
No, we just shut the door and I knew I'd have to deal with it at some point. But also, you know, we didn't ever talk about it, but I suppose we both knew at some point we'd try to have another baby.
And
I'm practical and I thought I'll put it away so I don't have to see it. But we hadn't decorated. I'm not good with that sort of stuff. So we had baby gear there, but no cute pictures or anything, which is probably good.
Probably was good.
Yeah.
But it's still, I don't know, he's still a beautiful person that came into the world. So if he had a bedroom set up for him, that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's, I don't know, is it horrible to see it or is it beautiful because you get to remember that he lived. He was part of you, you know. He did have a beautiful heartbeat and he grew till he was 9 months old.
So that's right. We got to do a little bit of that. Like he... I've kept his outfit that he wore and he had a beautiful blanket and the like, but that I put a jumper on him and my other two kids have worn it. So I got a little bit of that, you know, I don't have a photo of it, but I know he wore it. So the things that are passed on.
Yes.
And we joke with my second son, like, poor bugger, everything was a hand-me-down. So, you know, you can't get too big for your boots when that happens.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful.
Tell us about preparing for the funeral.
That was, I think we were pretty good up to that point because once you have something to, you've just
focus on,
put in front of the other. So we went to a bar nearby or something and wrote a eulogy for him.
Mm.
So I hope we didn't drive, actually, now I think of it.
That's okay.
But
we won't tell anyone.
Yeah, we'll just.
No one listens.
So we
to
did
this.
That. we chose some songs. We had Flame Trees and Tenerfield Sadler, and another beautiful song. And my parents and Bruce's parents wrote a letter to him, and you know, we always like to say he had a good, for a kid that never drew breath, he had a bloody good turnout.
Yes.
There wasn't a spare seat.
That's so important, isn't it?
But it is. Well, it was a good send off by any measure, yes. But especially for, you know, a little kid that never opened his eyes. But yeah. It was a beautiful service. But I don't know if Bruce felt the same way, but I knew once that was over, that was it. Real life would press down on us, yeah. Which it did.
Yeah.
So I remember looking around thinking, I don't want this to be over.
Yes.
This was just wrapped up with love.
Yes. And everyone's going back to their normal lives and they're just going to go back and cook tea and put their kids to bed and, yeah.
That's exactly right.
So. And did you have maternity leave?
I did. Mm. And thank goodness I get on my soapbox about this, but there's legislation before the parliament now to change that, to give certainty to that, but that's not the case for everyone. I'm a public servant in my day job, so I'm very lucky to have good employment conditions. So I took my I had 14 weeks of paid maternity leave, fully paid, so I'm very lucky. I took that at full pay, and then I took a couple of weeks holiday, but I also would have been entitled to the 18 weeks government parental leave, but I elected not to take that. But it's, you know, some people in the private sector, for example, or self-employed, obviously, there's no certainty of that for stillborn parents.
No, and, you know, you need that.
You're legislatively required to register a baby's birth. You've you've given birth.
Yes.
With all the medical stuff that you know, means. So I was pretty lucky.
Well, not lucky, that's what should happen.
Yeah,
that is what should happen.
Other people
that's
are unlucky, right, if that doesn't happen.
So what were those days like after the funeral?
Yeah, just home by yourself.
Could you sleep? Could you eat? What was, how did you get through?
Look, I'm pretty good on the fangs, so it takes a lot to stop me eating. But it was the only time in my life I wasn't eating well or regularly, and I wasn't sleeping well. It was horrible times. We took off because we didn't have other children at the time. We took off to the Hunter Valley, Bruce and I, and we just had a bit of time together.
Nice.
Then I wanted to be home.
Yeah.
We were talking about overseas travel just to run away.
Yes.
But we just couldn't be too far from home. So we did that, and then Bruce also was lucky. He had his parental leave, but about the six-week mark, it was like, well, you know, got to go back to work, which for him, which was right for him.
Yeah.
And I remember it being really lonely and awful then. Yes. I was just banging out the house.
Yes.
But then probably by the time mid-January rolled around, Pat was born at the end of October, I was probably ready to go back because I needed to do something. I knew by that point what had happened to Pat, and I felt this tremendous amount of guilt for being overweight. Saying I was flogging myself exercise wise, and you can only run so much every day. So I thought, I'll best get back to work.
Did you talk to someone, like a grief counsellor, or?
We did. We were supported. Red Nose. We were referred to Red Nose, formerly SIDS and Kids. And they were great. I mean, we fundraise for them and do a lot with them now because they're just amazing. So we had a grief council. We had a few sessions together, I think, and then on our own. But then privately we saw a grief counsellor.
Yeah.
And, yeah, look, that was probably me pushing that because I was mindful of the impact to our relationship too.
Yes.
People surviving child loss. The stats for marriages surviving aren't great.
Yeah,
and I knew
that. Imagine. Yeah.
So we took a preemptive strike there, which was good. And actually Bruce got a lot out of that counsellor because they just clicked. She was
thank goodness.
A really good fit for him. So
knowing those stats, did that help you? Because just in the multiple birth and disability world, those stats helped me because I could say, it's really, really hard.
Yeah, it's
this
really
is
hard.
Really hard for a reason.
Yes. Yeah.
So it did help
you.
Absolutely.
And I remember thinking, I don't know if it was the same for you respectively, but I remember thinking, I'm not going to let this baby that we love so much be the reason that we're not together anymore.
Mm.
So, you know, we're good because of him, not in spite of him.
Yes, yes.
That's brave.
It is. So, and when you knew that baby Pat wasn't alive, did the hospital believe you that you knew?
I think they probably, and I don't mean this in a callous way, I think they probably don't care. Like they're clinicians, they're focused on that,
yeah,
on the clinical side of things. You know, we've done a lot of advocacy work in this space now, and I'm on a board of a for Still Aware, which is a stillbirth awareness and prevention charity. Mm. And one thing that we talk about endlessly with clinicians and expectant parents is the mother's intuition. Mm. And yes, parents, I should say parents, but I think in this instance it's mostly a mother. Mm. It's powerful, and clinicians, I think, if I could generalize,
yes,
might midwives are more inclined to listen to a parent. And I know with subsequent pregnancies, midwives would change the conversation. Do you feel reassured after we've done XYZ? And if I said no, they'd keep going.
Yeah.
So I think that it's, you know, it took our experience with Pat to make that happen. So
I think
I've got another girlfriend who lost her firstborn 2 weeks after Pat, and we've become beautiful friends.
Yeah.
And we brought her boys together the next year at the same time. So it's very special. But she was young, and she's a lot younger than me. But no one ever took her seriously, and she had this sense of foreboding the whole time. She just, and no one took her seriously because she's young and healthy.
Right.
Yeah. I know it's not the same. When I went to my first, I had a real sense of foreboding with the boys, like really, really big sense of foreboding. I thought something is different. It was my fourth and fifth pregnancy, obviously, or fourth pregnancy. And then when I told my obstetrician, he said, I never ignore that anymore. Mm. He's like, I have never once had a woman that's had something and it hasn't been for a reason.
Mm.
So
that's great to hear. I hope more people take that lesson.
I know, because I think that people think we're being drama queens, and we're not. A sense of foreboding is not just, that's not like, oh, I'm scared something could go wrong. It's actually a feeling that it is wrong.
Yes.
Yes, that's a really important distinction. It is it is different.
Mm.
And I remember, and I don't talk about this terribly often, but about 2 weeks before Pat was born, I was bouncing around on the yoga ball at home, just trying to kick myself into labour. And I remember reading about a woman who'd had a stillbirth at term in the States, and her story had gone viral. And I was 39 weeks, and I just remember thinking, see, I'm not paranoid. This can happen even at this late stage. And then my thoughts wondered, I don't know how, but I sort of had this sense that, oh, that was going to happen to me, and what would I play at a baby's funeral? And then I felt terribly guilty. I'm terribly wicked having these thoughts. But you know, I always wonder, was it my body trying to tell me something? So it is powerful. I'm not alone in having those feelings.
No,
you're not. And the only people that ignore you, and all respect, but it's men, because they haven't carried a baby.
That's right.
And I know that's unfortunate for them, because it's an amazing thing. And I think of all the mums who are listening who haven't brought home a beautiful baby, I know that this is painful to hear. But I think when you've had a baby, and you, it's lived within you, you know when something's not right.
Mm. Yep, definitely.
Mm.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You said you had your next baby the next year. Is that right?
Yeah.
Tell us all about that.
And I acknowledge that I'm incredibly lucky because, you know, not everyone gets to have a baby after they lose one or at all. So,
yes.
But we always say here's our happiest accident. But they had the same due date a year apart.
Wow.
So We couldn't have done that if we tried.
No, you couldn't have.
No. So we weren't really in that space, but, you know, that it just happened and you just got to get on board. Mm. But what it meant in practical terms was all those milestones lined up. So
yes.
We're having a 20-week scan at the same time.
Oh, and wow. Goodness.
Yeah. So, look, it was not what we were prepared for, but we're very grateful that it happened for us that way.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. How did you choose the same midwife care and everything? Was things different or?
So I would have never been considered low risk again. So the birth centre was out, but I probably had a swing. I used to teach yoga and was a bit crunchy.
Yeah.
Not in a, you know, crunchy way, but I was a bit in that way inclined, but I just had a total 180, and so it was medical intervention all the way. I wanted nothing.
Every monitoring
crunchy.
Possible.
I wanted all doctors.
Yep. You're preaching
exactly.
to the choir.
Yep.
So we didn't have obstetrics cover in private. Had we probably would have done that, but we were entitled to the fetal medicine unit in Canberra's care.
Yeah.
And it was phenomenal.
Yes.
Like I can't, that's probably
where, the best
that's place
where to
that be. Midwife I spoke about before. Yeah.
Yep.
They're just, So we had, they picked me up on the books from about my dating scan at 6 weeks, and they carried me through to his induction early, and you know, I was having fortnightly appointments mostly, and I think this baby was the most surveilled baby in Canberra that year. So.
Yes, yes.
And so, did they induce you early?
They did, yep. So I think I mentioned to you guys I was really naive about preterm birth. I wanted that baby out probably from 28 weeks, which was on reflection. Now I know better. I know better. A ridiculous thing. And no one was ever thankfully going to indulge that whim of mine.
I understand
that too, of course.
Yeah, because then it was someone else's job to keep him alive, not yours.
Yes.
And that's, and Kate, that's exactly what it was. I thought, well, I don't have to, you know, I wouldn't sleep because I'd be monitoring movements.
Yes.
So I thought, oh, God, I just want to stuff that out. Once they're here,
someone
else's job, much better qualified than me on the job.
Mm.
So, so he was, I think we were negotiating and we settled on, I think I was 37 and 2 or 3 or something, that they wanted me to get, they wanted me to go a bit longer, but, you know, the walls were falling down.
Yes.
So that was the compromise.
Yes. Mm. No,
and he didn't
enough.
Need help to breathe. They had everyone there ready to go, but he didn't need help to breathe. But he probably, you know, when I look back now, having had a baby that was bathed a bit more, probably that's why he was never a great feeder and all that sort of stuff. But he can have a life.
Yep.
And my mum gave me crap. Like, she waited till the next day, but he was apparently screaming in theatre because I had a C-section.
Yep.
And I'm just there screaming equally loud, is he alive, is he alive? And mum said to me the next day, for God's sake, how many babies did you think were in theatre with you, you know? But
you need someone to say it though.
Yes, of course.
And no one was acknowledging me because, you know, I'm bleeding out. And, well, just, you know, the midwives were with the paediatrician.
Yeah.
And
I remember screaming for the APGARs and they were ignoring me. Yes.
It's very medical, a Caesar. Your head is exposed, but the rest of your body is someone else is looking after, and they don't really talk to the head.
Yeah.
They don't.
And you can't feel your body. It's just so weird.
So why did you have a cesarean? Was that a choice or?
No, if it had been a choice, I would have been, sign me up, baby. But no, it wasn't. And they made an excellent point on reflection. You know, I'd had a vaginal birth with Pat, so I could do it again. But I had an induction and I was there for 2 days and it just wasn't working. And thankfully we had a lovely obstetrician who came in. He was the he just came in and said, nope, this baby's stuck and they're not coming out. And then he had a private powwow with Bruce in the hallway, which I was cranky about at first because, you know, it's about me, not him. But he said, even if we can get her into labour, she's run out of steam, like, but coming on top of weeks of,
and a year of,
you know,
grief.
Stress. So, and that was a good call. And he was stuck. He still needed to be forceped out, even with a Caesar. So he was proper stuck.
He liked it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's right. That's
and,
right.
And what did that feel like, cuddling
yeah,
him?
Yeah, what did it feel like?
It was wonderful, but I was probably a bit numb to it.
Yes.
You know, I didn't believe it, and I, you know, I had postnatal anxiety, and it was awful, and that probably I probably didn't really kick in.
You were probably shocked again.
Yes, yes. And then I was conscious of, crikey, now he's here. Now it is my job to keep him alive. And, you know, I don't know what to do with the baby.
No. So. Yes.
But it was wonderful hearing him cry, and I didn't sleep very much because I'd check he was breathing all
of
the time.
Course.
And,
you know. Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Yes. And he didn't look like Patrick except when he was sleeping.
Oh.
Which is obvious. But, yes. So that gave me a bit of anxiety till he grew out of it. And yeah. Once he put on a bit of weight, he looked different. So
Yes.
And what were their weights born?
So Pat was 3 kilos,
yeah.
Which is good weight, but like the growth trajectory he should have followed, he should have been more like 3.2, 3.5. We're not, I might be a bit chunky, but we're not big people.
No.
So we had average babies, and the second one who was born around the same gestation was about the same. I think he was 10 grams lighter. So,
right.
You know, not much in it. So yeah. Just average little babies.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you attempt breastfeeding? What did you do feeding-wise?
I did. My mum had had trouble breastfeeding, so I sort of had an inkling it would go that way with me, and it did. And, look, I was feeding and feeding, and he was quite badly jaundiced, and we didn't throw that off for weeks and weeks. And thank God we had a sensible match nurse who sort of said at one point, we looked a bit bedraggled coming in at the 3 week mark, and I don't think he'd regained his birth weight, which I'm surprised no one was more onto. But
yeah.
Anyway, they sort of said, "Oh, you've got three choices here. One is I'm going to call the Tresillian Hospital. It wasn't Tresillian then, but and I'm going to get you in. We could keep doing what we're doing and keep trying, or we could try something else." But she couldn't actually say formula.
No, she wanted to say the word. Formula? Are they? Yeah.
Oh boy.
I know. And, like, you know, if I'd been in my right mind, I would have said, well, for God's sake, this is silly, but you're not in. You're just.
No, you're not.
You know.
You're vulnerable.
So yes, you are vulnerable.
And you had a little extra dollop of vulnerability because
massive.
You didn't get your first baby in that position of learning how to breastfeed. So you needed extra care.
So, look, I said, look, try formula. So we did. And she also got me into the hospital. But I think by that stage it was weeks and weeks, 7 or 8 weeks, and I probably missed the boat. I started drugs to stimulate it. But, look, third time around, I started drugs straight away. I was on the pump all the time. And I still, with my third one, I've had to supplement, but mostly breastfed. Oh. So it was just hard. And I persevered. I think I still fed him till like 10 or 11 months, but he was mostly having bottles. But,
he's pretty happy now. Every breastfed baby's breastfed.
That's right. He was breastfed.
He was
breastfed. Well, congratulations.
Yes. Yeah, that's a huge effort.
It's a big effort.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and it's a big mind game.
Yes, it was.
And how does it go?
And but I think I felt I owed him that.
I know.
Mm.
Yeah. How do you, I don't know if there's an answer to this, but how do you grieve simultaneous to celebrating a new life? Like, how does that work?
Around his anniversary?
Yeah, and even like having a baby.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah.
Yeah. Look, I don't know. Like, for everyone, I think grief sits right alongside the joy. And I felt very conflicted that first year where I had a 3-week-old baby at his first birthday, and I remember feeling particularly conflicted there.
Mm.
But people don't realize, like, when I look around at my family, I see what should be 5 heads.
Yes.
Four. People think that we're a perfect nuclear family, and people say, "Oh, I'm pigeon pair."
Yeah.
I am still constantly missing that other one.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And I just parent Pat in different ways now. We do stuff, you know, for him, and do a bit of charity stuff. So
what are the things, how do you celebrate him? What are the things you do?
So, you know, with our family, we do birthday parties for him. We drink Patrick wine a lot.
Good.
We're probably Patrick's best customers. But again, he really is part of the family. Yes. We talk about the three kids and we say, oh, Pat, you know, Pat would have been doing this, or
yes,
poor Pat, he would have been, you know, pinched by his baby sister these days. And
yes,
and you know, the stuff we do, like I work for Still Aware, and I'm starting to do some work for Red Nose. Mm. So that's how we, you know, he's part of our daily lives.
Yes.
Like we think of him every day.
He's, yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, how can you not? You can't.
Yeah,
he's,
that's right.
He's your child. So, yeah. Right. And the other children then get to grow up knowing that they have an older brother,
yeah,
you know, that he's part of their family.
They do.
And we've seen, yes, the generations before us that didn't do it.
That's right.
You know, I remember working, I used to be a nurse, and I'd work in care, and you'd work with a beautiful, you know, 90-year-old woman, and they would break down in tears and tell you the story of the baby that died that they were never allowed to tell anyone about. You know, that trauma, yep, stays forever.
Yes.
So we should always talk about it.
Absolutely. My grandmother had stillborn twin boys, actually, which is something my mum found out about that when she was pregnant with me.
Right.
Mum was just running through the questions that the midwife had asked her and, oh, you know, asked if there's a history of twins in the family. And my grandmother said, well, what did you say? And my mum said, well, I said no. And that's when my mum found out.
Wow.
Twin brothers.
And it was just, and they would have been close to term for twins,
oh,
I understand.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, again, she wouldn't have talked a lot about
no.
it. She had a conversation with mum before she died about it. But, yeah, like it, just they would have been taken away. They were buried the next day at
yeah,
the cemetery.
Yes, my grandma had a stillborn baby too before my dad, who's a twin.
Mm.
And she yeah. said she didn't see the baby.
No.
But at her funeral, which was probably, I don't know, I can't remember now how many years ago, they spoke about the baby and said she wanted everybody to know that she had a baby before the twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and you go, I don't know how those women survived it.
I don't know either. They just had to be tough and make dinner and.
Yes, just get home and get on with it.
Yes. Just, oh.
Yep.
No.
I can't fathom it. You just.
No.
Yeah, just. And my grandmother would have come home to three babies and
yeah.
just pick up right where you left off.
Yes,
yes,
my goodness.
And I don't know, I would like to think that other women sort of, you know,
rallied around
and said we love you, but I don't even know
so.
How much they told of their story.
Yeah,
like it just wasn't discussed. So whoever decided that women couldn't tell stories, you're paying for it now, because it's all we're doing.
Right. Yeah. That's the truth.
You know,
tell us about your second son and then the journey to his diagnosis.
So he was healthy baby, which we're very lucky about. And about 18 months old, he was at daycare by that point, and I just got a call at work, and they just said, he can't walk.
Oh.
He woke up from his nap and scooted out from his bottom. He was happy as. But couldn't walk. And so, and I suppose the legacy of Pat, I
yes.
think, you know,
oh
common
goodness.
Cold's going to kill my children.
Yes.
So
yes.
All systems go. So we went and picked him up, and I think we took him to the hospital that day, and it was, the knee was quite swollen. He was able to walk by that point. The knee was quite swollen. They said, oh, look, you know, I think they x-rayed it. Must have fallen down. Keep an eye on it. Come back. So about 2 weeks later, it was home on a Saturday. Happened again, and we took him not to the kids' hospital, which is the main one, just thinking, oh, this is going to be a waste of time. He's probably fallen over again. But they sent us straight to the kids' hospital, which sort of raised a few red flags
yeah.
for me. And then that was like Saturday morning, and then he was in surgery late Saturday night. So it's sort of I don't know how the day escalated, but they're obviously thinking bad stuff, because I remember at one point bailing up a doctor. I said, for God's sake, just tell me what you're doing. I said, what pathology, you know, are you taking? And they said something about, I must have known what the term was for white blood cells. I
yes.
said, are you thinking he's got leukemia?
Yes.
And they said, well, that's one of the things that we're thinking of, and,
oh,
you know, but it's not
goodness.
Likely. But they just didn't really tell me about it. But they were thinking it was a septic arthritis, which would have been you know, life-threatening.
Yes.
So 18 months old, we went from nothing to he's having surgery. So they aspirated the knee.
Wow.
And took all the fluid out. And at that point, they thought it was septic arthritis or joint infections or bone infections. So we stayed in hospital for a week and a half, and he was on a IV the whole time. And that's hard yakka with an 18-month-old
trying to get
cannulary.
Yes.
So that was fun. And I think we'd been, I've got family in Townsville, so we'd been up there. So I think it was a bit of a red herring, but they also had the infectious diseases team involved. They thought it might have been Ross River fever, viral infection.
Yep.
We left hospital with a horrible dose of antibiotics that were sort of summing up, do we need an IV? No, we can do it with the antibiotics. And but then it got worse and worse, and at this stage he's limping all the time and he's in pain. So I think 2 weeks later it was worse, we've got to go back. And same thing, you know, rushed in, they opened up the knee again, washed it out, ran more tests. But and this time, because we couldn't, his veins were so trash, they put a PICC line in to So that was a bit of an ordeal in itself, but we got a line in and we stayed in for another 2.5 weeks. But we left the hospital really without a diagnosis.
Right.
But they had a rheumatologist involved at the end, and eventually we left the public system, and I said, "Oh, we don't have a pediatric rheumatologist in Canberra. All his specialists we don't have in Canberra," which surprised me. So we travelled up to Sydney, saw probably the best pediatric rheumatologist, and he cleared up that diagnosis. This is juvenile arthritis. This is what we're dealing with. This is what we need to do. The knee was really badly in bad condition at that point. He wasn't walking properly.
Oh,
and he's 18 months old.
Yes.
So it's
when they're at their busiest.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
So he opened up the knee for the third time and aspirated it.
Oh, goodness.
But injected some steroids this time. And that was a real game changer.
Yes.
And then by this stage, we learnt more about arthritis. So, you know, it's autoimmune disease.
Yes.
Each time it had flared, it had been preceded by an infection,
right.
I think gastro or colds and stuff. So we learnt a lot more about that. And pretty much ever since, he's had four lots of joint injections now, where they open it up and aspirate it and do joint injections. And he's been on anti-inflammatories, and it's not great being on them.
But yes.
He's, this year he started methotrexate, which is we avoided that for a long time because I think a doctor in the hospital, when he was telling me about it, said, "Oh, you know, chemo drugs."
Yes.
So at that point I said, "Well, my kid's not having chemo drugs, so no thanks." But yes, once we learned more about it, they just they're used in much less doses, and just to suppress that immune system.
Yes,
And is that working?
Stop attacking itself. It's better, but he's on it at the moment, and we've just increased the dose. And I don't really know where we go from there.
Yeah.
So so he'll have to have anti-inflammatories as well with the pain, but it's pain management for, you know, a now four-year-old
baby boy.
Yeah.
And do you have to keep going to Sydney all the time, or do you manage it
in Canberra? Well, so we see a adult rheumatologist here.
Right.
But we don't have a pediatric one here. And also there's an eye condition that's really closely correlated with arthritis that he has to be screened for regularly. Like, it's serious. It can cause blindness.
Yes.
And there's no signs in kids, so you have to see a pediatric ophthalmologist.
Right.
And, again, we don't have one of those here.
Right.
But this year we were seeing someone who flew in from Melbourne every month, but COVID grounded her.
Of course.
That never occurred to me.
Oh, that's terrible.
So then we saw someone in Sydney, and they have since, a couple of months ago, they come in and run a clinic here once a month. So we're on the books there. So we
should
have to, yes.
How did you handle the diagnosis? How did you feel?
At that point, I felt pleased to have a diagnosis.
Yes.
It had been so long without it, and we just knew our kid couldn't walk and it wasn't getting better. So I felt pleased, but also, you know, I felt once I, like, it's not likely going to kill him, but it's going to impact his life for the rest of his life.
Yes.
And I'm not a clinician, so I'm going to fumble this, but he's got the sort of genetic markers that mean at 16 or 18, he's going to clock over from having juvenile arthritis to rheumatoid arthritis. Yes. So we know that it'll probably be a lifelong thing for him.
Mm. Yes.
So, yeah, well, look, I felt pleased to have a diagnosis, but, you know, I'm always wary of what the rest of his life is going to look like because, and this is a silly thing, but I keep coming back to it. He's a boy, like currency in the playground can be running around.
Yep.
Is he going to not be able to do that?
Yep.
He's got a good sense of humour, so I hope he cultivates that.
Yes. We know that all those thoughts,
Yeah, well, that sense of humour will get him through.
Yes.
I hope so.
Yep. And yes, people will be drawn to him because of that.
Yeah. Totally. Yes. He's the definition of resilient.
He really is.
So don't let anyone tell you that he needs to be more resilient.
No, don't.
As we get into the school years. That's just our tip.
Yes. He's already resilient.
He's already resilient.
That's a good tip.
Yes. And then another baby. What's the age gap between your second and third?
3.5 years.
Okay.
So we were a bit gun shy.
Yes.
So we didn't think we'd try again. And then I probably decided I wasn't done. And Bruce said, well, I am. And that was an unhappy stalemate for a while.
Yeah.
But he came from the pub, home from the pub one night.
Perfect.
And he said, all right, let's do it.
Okay, right now.
Okay, see ya.
Aww.
I said, well, don't get any ideas. I've got to take out private cover and serve a waiting period. So it was a bit of a, it was a very strange situation.
Just a pub epiphany.
Yes.
Yeah.
They happen quite often. But
yeah, that's right.
Often they're not really that great when you sober up.
What was her pregnancy like?
I hoped it would be less awful and anxiety-inducing, but it wasn't, even 3 years on.
No, it can't be.
No, and this time, because it was more, we were a bit more in control of the factors, we decided we'd go private.
Yep.
So we found an obstetrician who we liked, and he had midwives that we liked and worked with. She was probably my easiest pregnancy physically, which was pretty amazing given I was a geriatric pregnancy at that stage, and I am an old duck.
You're not.
But, she was it was a bit calmer, I suppose, but she wasn't a real wriggly baby. And there were signs, I think about it happened just before Christmas, so maybe from about 24 weeks to 28 weeks, her growth just nosedive. So she went from hugging like the 15th percentile, which is still small, to like dipping under the fifth. And that's what we found out happened to Patrick. He was growth restricted. So there were some hairy times. And I think we were talking seriously about getting her out at 28 to 32 weeks.
Mm.
But then she chunked up. And that was a blessing.
Mm.
Because this time around, of course, I didn't want to have a baby so early.
Yes.
Having wanted to get my second one out so much quicker, I didn't want to get her out quickly. We had a planned C-section, you know, drove to the hospital in the morning, you know, sat around, had a baby by, went into theatre at 8 and was back on the ward by 9. It was a very different experience.
And did you know she was a baby girl?
We did. I had the extra tests that tell you pretty early. No, I remember not quite believing my doctor when we have boys.
We have boys.
That's right. So that was a nice surprise. I mean, I can't say that it's any different, but I think, I think I am pleased that I have a girl as well.
Yeah, but, well, because once they're your baby, you're pleased that they're
so
you can't really, the gender's irrelevant.
Yes. Yeah.
You're like, it's this person.
Yeah, and
I love
alive.
This person. Yeah. Yeah, and she,
that's exactly
and
right.
she came home with you. So
how
that's
did that
all
feel
that
introducing them to each other?
Oh, pretty magic.
Mm.
Yeah, he was saying the whole time, you know, oh, would you, I would ask him, would you like a baby brother or sister even before I was pregnant? And he would just say, like, pretty early on, he would have been 2.5 or 3 at the time, no, just, and then he'd tell me his name. That's all he wanted.
Yeah.
So we were pretty worried about how it was going to go down. But yeah. He's been very gentle and loving. And she just adores him.
Of course.
Whenever he's in the room, she just, you know, could ditch any of us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's nice to have siblings if that's how your life works out. It is nice. It's a real privilege to be a parent.
It is a privilege.
It is.
It's a privilege.
And one that we know a lot of people don't get to have or choose not to, that's fine. But, yeah, it is a privilege, and especially for you.
Yeah.
We're glad.
Yeah. Mm. I'm pretty glad too.
Yes.
I'm sure that Kate and I have not asked all the right questions.
Yep.
So because we have not lived this story.
Yep.
So is there something that we have missed that you would love to tell the world about Patrick and or part of your story?
If you know, statistically people are going to know someone who have lost a baby, whether that's through miscarriage or stillbirth or neonatal death, like don't be afraid to talk about those babies and ask about them, you know, all those, like I think I said to both of you, I don't get to talk about Patrick very often. Not many people ask about him. So I love talking about him.
Yes. This is his episode.
Telling people about his birth and what did he look like and all that sort of thing. And I think that's really important because I think for most people, statistically, you're going to know someone who's lost a child.
That's right.
Well, we're very honoured.
We are very honoured.
You chose to talk to us about Patrick. I'm glad he shares the name of my dad.
Yes.
And everyone can listen to this story whenever they want. Patrick's story is out.
Yes.
That's lovely.
Thank you for letting me talk about him. Oh, it was lovely to talk to you.
And thanks for driving from Canberra to Sydney to come to our live show. I thought you lived in Sydney. I feel terrible now. I didn't give you enough kudos on the day.
It was a week or two before Sam's.
Yes.
It was lovely. It was just before my third baby was born, so it was nice to get
away. Wow. Well, thank you.
What a woman.
Yeah, what a woman.
Yeah, women are amazing.
Women are, gosh darn it, amazing.
Amazing.
Yes. Yes. Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
It was really good to talk to you.
We'll be thinking of you tomorrow.
We will.
Thank you.
All our love.
Thanks so much.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
How amazing was that?
Oh,
wasn't it beautiful to talk to her? She was so beautiful at the Sydney show with that baby growing inside her.
Oh, no.
And she just waited at the back and said, I just want to give you this, Kate.
Oh, Kate.
Patrick Wine. She just made a huge impression on me. She's a beautiful person.
Yes.
And thank you for coming on. And also we're starting something slightly different. We find that it's a bit confronting for our guests to be forced to say what was a cry, difference, laugh.
Yes.
If they really want to do it, we're really happy. It's also really hard to do over Zoom because you talk over each other and you're laughing. And
So we're just going to do some of it by ourselves now.
So too bad you just got Mandy and I.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll start.
Yeah.
Okay. So two things. Well, more than two things. This week I've had a week of tears, but and I know we already spoke about this on the Snap Pea, but watching the Daniel Andrews press conference where he said we could come out, I think all of Melbourne cried.
Not for the parents because it was 3:15 and so I was at school pickup.
I know. See, I was at home because Buzz and Woody finish at 4. Well, they get off the bus at 4.
So I'm standing up at school. Sorry, it's your cry.
No.
And someone goes, he just said we can get out. Someone said we can get out. We can go shopping tomorrow or Wednesday. And I was like, what?
And my friend Claire said she was driving in her car and everyone was honking.
Oh.
Just down the road honking because she realised. Yes.
Yes.
And so I watched the project that night and like Waleed and Pete, but they were like, we cried. And I thought I think all of Melbourne cried.
Yes.
So we have our collective crying.
Yes, collective crying.
It was amazing. So that made me cry. And then the other thing that made me cry is I was talking to Buzz and Woody about the fact that Mandy and I had been nominated as Australian of the Year. And I said, the awards are on at this time at night. No one can have any internet. So you can't go on your iPad or your Xbox. And they were like, oh, okay. And I said, but I want to let you know that Mandy and I know that we're not going to progress to the next round. So don't. Because they said, what happens if you win? I said, we would have to go to Canberra and we'd have to do some talks, but we know that we're not going to, and there's these really amazing people. And I told them about everyone that was nominated, and I said, there's this amazing neurosurgeon who's, you know, helping people walk, you know.
Yes.
And Woody said to me, "Oh, but you do more than make people walk. It's okay not to walk. You make people happy. It's not okay to not be happy."
Oh.
And so that that made me cry, and I thought that's better than any award I could ever
win. Really,
thank
really
you for
is.
Your incredible moment of clarity before you ran off, you know, and hid Nerf guns.
Well, the same cry for me is when they announced that Donna had won,
yes.
And then I sort of we waited on the Zoom for a bit, and
yes,
then
we didn't know what we were doing.
I didn't know what we were doing, and then I came out into the other room, and Molly came out, and then she just had this look on her face. And then she cuddled me, and then she burst into tears.
Yes.
And I said, "Oh, are you upset?" "Yes, I wanted you to win."
Oh, I love that she wanted you
no.
to win, Mandy.
She said
I
was.
It.
She said I was shaking.
Oh, I love her. She's just the best.
And then I said, "It's okay." I said, "Oh, it's all right. I feel good about it." And
yes.
She said, "You're just the best mum."
Oh,
I'm
so happy that she's so proud.
I know, I'm so happy too. Yeah, yeah. She's proud. She's
yeah.
proud. So, yeah, that made me cry as well as everything.
Being
and
right
I
out.
Also got a couple of cards from people and some flowers at my door on that day saying congratulations.
Beautiful.
And just such a lovely words.
Yes, yes, so lovely. Which leads perfectly segue into my
What Made a Difference.
Two things have made a difference to me this week. One of them was we got an email from Who Gives a Crap. Now, if you don't live in Australia, they are toilet paper subscriptions. So
yes.
You get a box of toilet paper delivered to your house. It's recycled
it's the best.
Paper. It all comes in paper. There's no plastic. It's called Who Gives a Crap. And they donate profits to charity. Anyway, I'm a Who Gives a Crap gal.
Same to me.
And
so when the toilet paper drought happened,
I was
were
very
fine.
Smug. I was like, I was giving it away.
It's
like,
I've got 50 rolls.
Yep. But they said, listen, we just have heard that you're doing amazing things. We don't want any recognition. We don't want you to talk about it on the podcast. Too bad I am. We'd just like to give some toilet paper to your families.
Oh.
Have you got five families that could use toilet paper?
Yes,
we did. And they love it. And it'll be on today's Instagram and everything.
Yes,
you'll
my
see.
Beautiful friend's
yes.
little boy. I won't say his name, but
yes.
Yeah, just wait till you see him and he says, "Thank you."
Yes,
oh,
and it's so
I was just like, oh.
Oh, it was just the most amazing
beautiful.
Video to get. And
yeah.
Who would have thought toilet paper could make such a difference, but it
oh,
did.
Oh, my, I messaged 4P friends, Kate messaged one, and they were just like, wow. They're
I
like,
know.
Look at the influencers.
Listen, other people get fake tan, we get toilet paper.
We get toilet paper. And I was just so pleased it was sent straight to their doors.
Oh, it was just – and he did it the next day.
I know.
And no fanfare. And also I wanted to say what made a difference, three bunches of flowers turning up on the day
yes.
of our nomination, and they are stunning. They're on my kitchen bench
yes.
and
I
felt loved.
Too. Me too.
And
beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Amy,
thank
my
you.
Support worker, she
oh.
just –
just the best.
Just the best. Thank you.
Yep.
Oh, okay. My make a difference is bizarre, but
yep, that's okay.
I have started taking probiotics.
Oh.
And look at my skin. Have you noticed?
Yes, actually.
My skin has never looked so good.
Probiotics are amazing.
I'm like, okay, I know my friend Marianne is a naturopath. She'll be like, where have you been for 44 years? But you know why? I realized because the bottle is like
$50. Yes, it's
and
really
I haven't
expensive.
Had money for that
and
before.
And you have to keep it in the fridge.
Yes,
and, yeah.
So I just thought this probiotics is a luxury for me.
Yeah, it's $1 a day
and
or
so
more.
I feel like yeah. It's not really, but it is.
No, it is.
And I'm like, is this, I've battled with my skin for, I could cry for so many years.
Yeah.
And my goodness.
It's amazing. Not only that, there's a whole lot of other side effects. Like I know I've got a friend who had tinea for years.
Right.
Started taking probiotics. Gone.
Right.
So
I know,
amazing.
Look, I know a diet of Coke Zero is not
and donuts.
Conducive to lots of great stuff, but I'm just really thrilled and I've decided as my self-care, I'm going to buy the expensive germs. And I'm going to do that, right? I also want to talk about this little machine called Flawless, and it's a little what are they called? Like you know, to get hair off your body,
exfoliator.
No,
I have to peel it. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
What are they called? Anyway, just because for Molly has a little bit of hair like on her lips.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it was a bit, I didn't want to talk to her with waxing
no.
or anything. This little machine is awesome. She
does
tolerates
it.
Nope. And it just looks like a little lipstick. And I bought it from the shaver shop. So I just thought this could be handy for those of you with teen girls that you're needing to do like some facial hair. And it's, she tolerates it.
Okay.
So it doesn't hurt. It's just a little bit of tingling.
Yep.
And it doesn't grow back thicker or anything because I'm, you know, thinking down the track, do we do laser for things?
Yeah.
And, you know, she's just that age where you just don't want to do anything that's going to upset her.
No, it can be
so
her choice.
I thought, maybe if we find a little, if Aka can find the flawless thing from the shaver shop and it's just, you know, one little battery and
awesome.
Yeah, we just, I do it as well. I say, look, I'm going to do my little mustache and I do your little mustache. So she won't mind me telling you that because it's really changed her face.
Yeah, beautiful.
And it's not traumatic.
No, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, go, laugh.
Okay, so I've had a whole lot of things that made me laugh, but one of them, and I'm not going to go into it, but a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful woman that was nominated for a Senior Australian of the Year, Lorna.
Yes.
Her video on Zoom, Mandy and I were laughing because she was just beautiful. Everything about it was beautiful. It was like someone had made a prop of what a 90-year-old woman's kitchen would like. I laughed heaps when Andy Lee recorded his, and then a zero comes along, when Melbourne got a day
That's
of
really
zero.
Good.
And then the funniest thing was Mandy and I were on ABC Conversations and I texted Mum and I said, oh, we were on. And she said, her reply was, very good. Fruit mince tarts are in Woolies. And that's how you stay humble, bitches.
These mums, they're keeping – if you think we're getting big heads, our mums will never let us.
Never. She rang me and she was like, someone said you were on the TV. I said, I told you. Oh, I forgot. The best. I love it.
I know. Yeah. So funny.
Yeah,
well,
so funny.
I just have to tell this story. I got an email the other day from my friend Suze who listens and she says, we've got a meeting for the netball club because netball is going to start up in a couple of weeks. It's on at 7:30 on Tuesday the 27th. Could someone go to it because I've got another Zoom meeting? And I wrote back and said, I am laughing as I write this because I don't want you to think I'm up myself, but I can't do it because I've got the Australian of the Year award.
My Zoom's better than yours.
And so she wrote back, that is hilarious. But then my friend Erin writes and goes, well, I'm laughing too and I don't want you to think that I'm up myself, but I've got a Zoom meeting for the kinder committee. So I saw her this morning. I said, were you successful in the kinder committee Zoom last night? Because we weren't successful. Just, I laughed for ages.
Oh, that's good. I
love
it.
People are so funny.
Yep.
And as I said on Today Extra, if you've seen us, Molly did come home after doing her protective behaviours course talking about, today I learned about condoms. And she just kept telling us about condoms. It was funny and cute and, you know, she was kind of worried about it all. So that's what gets taught at special schools in the protective behaviours and I'm really thankful for that.
Yes,
so
very, very thankful.
It was a little bit funny and then it was a lot of, yeah. And then, that's right, because it's the same night as the award. So I tucked her into bed. I gave her a big kiss and she said, what a day, awards and condoms.
And I'd just like to say that probably at the Oscars those two things do go
probably.
Hand in hand.
I texted her teacher that. She said she has the best sense of humour, that one.
She really does. Oh, thanks for sitting with us. Thanks for listening to beautiful Patrick's story.
Yes, remember him.
Always remember Patrick.
Yeah.
And rate and review. Thank you to everybody who supports us on Acast and go and buy our merch.
Patrick's birthday is the 29th of October.
Yes, every year.
Yeah.
So
thank you, Peas.
All right,
Peas.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.